So at the wedding, you had them do a dance routine to the song from Dirty Dancing. So, like, where did that come from?
So that was really fun. I was like, okay, who is this guy? He's really stoic. He's not going to dance, this sort of thing. And I thought, okay, what is the craziest dance he could do? And so I thought about doing Thriller, and I was like, that's not good. I mean, that's a good one. And I thought about a number of them, and I was like, and we could have done, a lot of people do the Footloose one, but I thought this would be kind of fun, and you see these at weddings occasionally. So I thought, oh, this would be really fun. And so what was really fun is that I had to learn parts of it in order to talk about it, and I had to learn how to explain it and teach it. So I actually took an online class on how to do this dance, and they had like, six or seven parts to the class, and so it would, nobody was, it's me in my office with my computer on, like, doing the dance, right? And because I'm learning how to do it. So yeah, it was ridiculous. My husband's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "The Dirty Dancing dance." And he's like, "By yourself." And I'm like, "Feel free to join me." He's like, "No, thank you." So anyway, but it was fun to do, and I was trying to figure out how to explain how to do it, and it was fun. So yeah, in my head.
Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another Literary Escape podcast. And I'm so excited to have Susan May Warren back with us. But this time, we are going to discuss her Minnesota Kingston series, which our book club just finished reading and discussing. So welcome, Susan.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I love talking about the Minnesota Kingston, so this will be a fun conversation.
I cannot wait. So we're just going to dive right in. There are five books in this series, and we have some questions on all of them. So we're going to start with your first book with Jack, which, by the way, we loved the covers. I know I
Thank
didn't
you.
put that in my questions I sent to you, but how did you come up with the covers, I guess, for these?
So we do a thorough internet search, and I have a lot of photos from private photographers that are in my portfolio, and usually I'll reach out to one of them, and they'll give me somebody that they've recently shot, and then we grab their picture and license it, and then we kind of mold it a little bit, work with it a little bit. So yeah. So anyway, but I have a very specific idea of what I want. So like before I even write the series, I pick out all of the characters. I'll contact whatever photographer we're working with or whatever, and we'll then get a whole portfolio. I'll spend some time finding the right pictures, and then I take that and I figure out who's who and how they're going to lay out create the character. So it's kind of fun. I have a picture of them before I start writing, so I kind of already know what they look like and kind of can imagine their personalities a little bit. So that's a little trick that really helps me when I'm writing a series of like a family series, because I can see them all at once and they can all walk on the page kind of fully formed, which is a really nice way to introduce characters. So yeah, in my head they're real people, and so it's fun. So
Yeah.
but that's the way I do it, and sometimes I license it, and well, I've started to license it for exclusive, but every once in a while I'll get a license that's not exclusive, and then I'll see my hero show up on another book, and I'm like, "What are you doing over there? Come on!" But it's okay. There's a lot of photos out there, so it's all good.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I never even would have thought to do that, to talk to a photographer and get a picture and oh, that's neat. Well, we loved all the covers in this series,
Well,
so.
thank you.
And I will say to tag on to that. So during our book club discussion, I think all of us said we blew through these books so fast, like a week to 2 weeks to get through the series.
Wow, that is fast. That's crazy fast.
Crazy fast, especially when two of our book club ladies have families, they've got little ones, that they're keeping up with. So I
Yeah.
was impressed. Now Tiffany likes to do audiobooks, so she's listening as she's driving and doing stuff around the house. But sure. Anyways, we loved it. So we were just wondering, like, what were you hoping, like, readers felt at the end of book one that makes them go immediately, I've got to have book two, and then so on through the series?
Right. So it's very important for the reader to feel invested in the family and like they care about what's going on. So that second, you know, the first to second transition is really important, right? So you have to make sure that in the first book, they meet the second character that's going to, you know, be in the second book. So I really tried to write it so that it was almost a continuation of the first book. So we finished the first problem, but we raised a new problem, and that they would get to know Penny and be intrigued about her and Connor. And so that we could kind of, or Conrad, so that we can kind of, I have so many names, Conrad, so we could kind of, you know, figure out how their romance is going to progress. And so I did put a lot of bait in the first one. And I wanted readers to be like, okay, we feel like Jack is on his road with his girl. And now we're going to move on to Conrad and his girl and solve this big mystery. And I really love creating series that have long plots. I always envision my series as sort of limited run TV shows, you know, where like you have a problem in the first one and you might solve that, but now it brings another problem and another problem. And so, you know, by the time you get done, it's this kind of deeply woven plot that's, you know, kind of unique and interesting. And, you know, and of course it kind of develops as it goes, but I really plot it before I start. I kind of know exactly where I'm going. And then of course things come up as I'm writing that I didn't expect, and I kind of weave them in and that sort of thing. It does help too that I write them fast. So I'm, you know, you read them fast, but I'm also writing them like, you know, every 3 to 4 weeks. So like I'll sit down and I'll, you know, muscle through a book and then, you know, take a little time off, but then I'll muscle through the next one. And by the time I'm done, the first book hasn't come out yet. So I can go back and fix anything I need to in the first book. And then, you know, I can, you know, and that way it makes it a little bit more like people are like, how did you know to put that in the first book? Well, it's because I wrote the last book. I was able to go back and fix it. So sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes I have to be really creative because the book's already come out. But in this case, I was writing them really fast. So I was able to kind of move it all together. So, and I, yeah. I really love the structure of this series too, with Emberly and Steinbeck, and how there was a, you know, we didn't know who she was, right? And so there was this consistent subplot with them. And I really liked building that because that was different for me. I usually have like a, you know, a subplot of the next characters that are coming. But this time I just thought, oh, we're just going to have this underlying thread throughout the whole thing. And then, you know, have them be the last book. So that was really fun to write too, because I could be like, okay, who are these guys and what's their story? So that was really fun. Okay. So that's probably more of an answer than you needed. But
we spent a lot of time talking about that. And like, as we were reading, there was a lot of texting in our group about, have you figured out what's going on with those two? And, you know, yeah, so we really enjoyed that. And you did a great job weaving their story in, and it holds you all the way to the end, because you have to wait till the last book, you know, for their story to come out.
And so hopefully the last book is worth it. The audiobook for that is dropping right now in my store. So if anyone is listening to audiobooks, you can get the whole series now. So that's kind of nice.
Nice. So Jack's dad was another one, like one of those side characters that we really enjoyed and connected with. But he has this really powerful scene with Jack in the woodshop, I believe, that they have, where he talks about just telling Jack, like, the only one judging you is for your failures is you, right? So where did you pull that wisdom from? And how do you, like, pull that wisdom and that faith in without feeling too preachy in the moment?
Yeah, so that's a great question. First of all, my books are very integrated with my personal Bible study. So I'm in the Word every morning and have a lot of tools and resources I use. I'm a person that listens to a lot of sermons. I don't listen to podcasts as much. I mean, I do. I love the, you know, like these kind of podcasts or whatever, but I'm not a big, and I don't watch a lot of, I like TV. I do. And we'll watch something on the weekend. But anyway, all that to say is that during the week, and especially when I'm writing, I'm saturating myself with scripture, with good teaching, with, you know, good music, this sort of thing. And a lot of times I'm praying about what the theme is. And so a lot of times it just kind of starts to come to me as part of the process of engaging with the characters and engaging with the Word, which is life and truth, you know, so it just merges together really well. And I'm always praying, what is the truth for this character? So that's that part of it. I don't claim to be like some Bible scholar. All I do is really just put into the story the thing that makes sense, the truth that I feel like we're grappling with in that particular story. And so, but to do that naturally, I have a couple of things. One is that my characters all believe a lie as they start the story. There's a lie that they believe based on their past. We all have lots and lots of lies that we believe. And I just pick one that our character, my character has, and he sort of built his life on. And everybody sort of has a lie theme in their life where, you know, they sort of have built their life around a theme without realizing it. So that's kind of how I start my characters. And then I'm like, okay, who's the truth tellers in my story? So I'll have a couple of characters who are truth tellers. It's usually a parent, like a dad. It doesn't have to be though. It could be a friend. It could be, sometimes I have this random guy that shows up. His name is Judah Lyon, and he's been in a lot of books, and he's kind of my miraculous Jesus character that just kind of shows up. And I love to put him in. Like, I try to do it in a really remote way where people are like, oh, that's him, right? And he just kind of appears. And I just like to do that because I'm like, well, maybe that is the Jesus character, and he's just showing up and he's just given some truth. So anyway, so if I don't have somebody reliable that I can work with, I sometimes will throw him in. But I really try to have truth tellers. And a truth teller doesn't have to have be somebody that has their life all together, but they have to have some wisdom in that particular area, right? Or sometimes I have it come out of like the mouth of children where they innocently say something that really impacts a character. So I think you can get truth from a lot of different places. You just have to be really creative as an author, how you're going to put it in. So it feels like part of the conversation is really natural. And I think it's really natural for my characters to have relationships with their parents or adult parents that are, of course, with their adult children. Of course, parents are adults. So. But that have, you know, these relationships that can be more of like, they're still their peers in a way, but they're also teaching them stuff. And I feel like that's a healthy kind of thing. So I try to build those kind of relationships within my stories. Doesn't mean that they're not flawed, but, you know, they're still that kind of positive relationship. So yeah, so within every story, even if they're, you know, my characters are walking far away, like in my story with the Minnesota Marshals, I had a character named Ned, and there was a girl named Shay, and she was kidnapped and put into a Russian gulag ship in Russia, and her next door neighbor was Judah Lyon, and that's where we first met him. And I was like, okay, that's my voice of truth guy. So anyway, so back to that, I feel like we all struggle with lies, and we all have pieces of truth in our life. So it's not hard to just integrate it in a really natural way, because it's part of our, I mean, we're spiritual beings as well as, you know, physical and emotional. So yeah.
And you did a really good job with that. I will tell you, one of the scenes we talked about in Jack that stood out, well, that was one of the scenes that really stood out to us when after we had read it, but also at the end where he has to basically tackle the guy that's on why did her
Harley,
name just
it's not Harley. That's the one.
Harper.
That's just out now.
Harper.
Harper. Thank you. Harper.
And when he's like, nobody touches my woman.
Yeah.
We were right. Like, oh, we're all in love with Jack now.
Yeah. No, that was great. I really like that scene too. I love that he finally came to that realization that basically she's been his girl for a long, long time. He just needed to accept that. So yeah, that was a fun moment. I loved it too. I love it when I'm writing that and I write that and I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. And so I get like the first jolt of emotion, you know, and it's really fun as the author to write that moment. And then, yeah, it's fun when my readers like it too. So thanks.
Yeah. And if you're listening, if you want to pop back to episode 200, you can hear our whole discussion on Jack, because there's a lot to learn about him. He's an awesome character. And so is Harper. We really liked Harper, too. But also within Jack's story, you spread some breadcrumbs for Doyle, too, who doesn't come out till book 3. So he agrees to be an usher at the wedding, but not a groomsman. And there's a reason behind that, which also got our little texting group going, too, because it was trying to figure out what happened to Doyle. And we'll get there. But you just did a really good job of dropping breadcrumbs throughout. Keep us going.
Thank you. Well, I feel like, you know, especially at a wedding, everybody shows up and everybody has their thing, right? And so it's like, you know, all these family members know each other and they're fully formed. And so they don't have to ask each other about the past. They just know, okay, he's going to be an usher and we all know why, you know, kind of thing. So it's easy to drop those breadcrumbs because as a family, they wouldn't necessarily explain it to the reader. They would just be like, yeah, I know. The fact that he's coming to the wedding at all should be a good thing, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, yeah, that's... So yeah, it's fun to do that when they're fully formed like that.
Yeah, I did have to ask one more question on Jack. So at the wedding, you had them do a dance routine to the song from Dirty Dancing. So, like, where did that come from?
Well, so that was really fun. I was like, okay, who is this guy? He's really stoic. He's not going to dance, this sort of thing. And I thought, okay, what is the craziest dance he could do? So I thought about doing Thriller, and I was like, oh, that's not good. I mean, that's a good one. And I thought about a number of them, and I was like, and we could have done, a lot of people do the Footloose one, but I thought this would be kind of fun, and you see these at weddings occasionally. So I thought, oh, this would be really fun. And so what was really fun is that I had to learn parts of it in order to talk about it, and I had to learn how to explain it and teach it. So I actually took an online class on how to do this dance, and they had like, six or seven parts to the class. And so it would, nobody was, it's me in my office with my computer on, like, doing the dance, right? And because I'm learning how to do it. So yeah, it was ridiculous. My husband's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, the Dirty Dancing dance. And he's like, by yourself. And I'm like, feel free to join me. He's like, no, thank you. But it was fun to do. And I was trying to figure out how to explain how to do it. And it was fun. So yeah, in my head, I'm a dirty dancer girl. I mean, not that way, but I mean, I can do
I
the
know.
okay, anyway.
Great. We loved that too. We thought that was just brought some humor to a pretty intense time because you've got Penelope missing and all of these things happening, right? So.
It was kind of hard to weave that in. Like, she's missing and we have to go to dance practice. So like, what's happening here? Yeah. So that was a
Yes.
little tricky, but I was like, okay, what is the emotional role here that I need to do? So yeah, that
It
was
was
fun.
that little break I think that readers need, when you're in that intense. And so you did, we just loved it. We talked about that quite a bit too. So, but that takes us into book two, which it features Conrad and Penelope. And so I will tell you, I didn't like Penelope in book one.
She
Did
was
you
kind of
like intend
selfish.
that or not so much?
Yeah, I did. She it was hard because I felt like what she was doing was extremely selfish, but she reminded me a lot of people that just don't get it. Like, she's really not a mean person. She just didn't get it. She was so, and she was raised so wealthy outside of, the norms that it made sense that she didn't get it. But yes, I had to make her really likable in the second one because she wasn't, I didn't even like her. I was like, girl, you disappeared, you hid out, all these kind of things. That wasn't right to do that. And so I was kind of mad at her, and I kind of tried to make Harper, like, tell her off a little bit and say this wasn't right. And yet at the same time, everyone was worried, and there was a little bit of reason to worry. So anyway, yeah, I'm with you. I was struggling, but at the same time, I thought, okay, maybe she's curious enough and Conrad is winning enough that people will go to book two and stay the course with her. And I think she kind of redeems herself in book two, so that's good.
Yeah, and she does because once you get to know her in Conrad's book and you kind of know the why behind, you're like, I can feel sympathetic towards that. But you did a really great job of making her unlikable in book one.
Thank you. When she wasn't nasty. She was just
No.
clueless, like, so,
Yes.
and almost like narcissistic in that way, where it's like, oh, but she wasn't like, it's all about me. It was more like, it's all about my podcast and what, this sort of thing. So it wasn't the same thing, but it was still sort of like so selfish. So anyway, So anyway, well, I'm glad that you thought I redeemed her too, because I worked really, really hard to redeem her in part two. I was like, oh no, she's not likable. So yeah.
No, it was great. And we ended up loving her in the end. But so Conrad's a little different because he's a well-known hockey player. He has to deal with the social media side of things, but so does Penelope, right? And so the whole fake relationship, but he thinks it's real, but she thinks it's fake. We actually were really worried at that scene where she's running to him actually for help after somebody had busted her car window and stuff.
Yes, and she
And
goes
he,
up to his house, and it's the
yes.
middle of the night, and he's mad at her.
Yeah.
And he opens the door, and he's like, "Yeah, what are you doing here?" And he's not gonna let her in. And then he looks at her
Yes.
car. Yeah.
I was so worried. I'm like, no, she legitimately needs your help. Don't shut the door in her face. But so how do you like, How did you keep that tension up? Because it's kind of hard, I would think, on your end to keep up the fact that one knows it's fake and one doesn't know it's fake. And how do you keep that tension there?
Well, it's, I don't know, but I have this ability to crawl inside the character that I'm working on and only write it from his point of view. So, you know, I was able to be like, how does he view this? And that really is a trick for me. And if I don't get it, I struggle with the book. So I just finished a novel that's coming out next year. And I just told my husband, I'm not done with it, because even though I wrote it, I don't feel like I really knew my characters. Like, even after two passes on it, I was like, I don't really know these guys. They're spies, you know, they're fun, but you know, I have to get into the nitty gritty of them. And so once I can get inside and figure out who they are and really understand them, then I can easily write their emotional experience from their point of view. Cause I'm like, okay, he doesn't know that she's done this. And then she does this and he's kind of mad at her. He's like, I can't believe you did that. And then she shows up and needs him. And, you know, so yeah, and that bonding scene, I think it was after that, that they go to search the guy's house. I'm trying to remember. I think it's from there that they go and search the guy's house. And that's kind of their like rebonding scene, because they have to like escape the house before the cops get there. And there's kind of this crazy interaction between the two of them. And anyway, yeah. But, and so they kind of get back on the same wavelength at that point. Anyway, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a while.
No, we were just really concerned at that moment, but you're right. You get them back together and, no, you did a really good job. There's a couple things, though, that stood out to us. One was Conrad's panic attacks mm-hmm. over an event in the past. Mm-hmm. He kind of reminded us of Jack a little bit. Like, he took on the responsibility of something that really he shouldn't have shouldered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you write those panic attacks, do you do a lot of research on, like, what that would feel like? Or
yeah, that's easy for me, because I have had situations like that. And so I've had moments where I'm like, and his moment was to be exposed again, like just, you know, have the world see him like that person that he was and feel like he's exposed. And so, you know, I understand that too, as a public speaker and things like that. I've had things happen where I'm like, oh no, and I'm super embarrassed. And so like, I easily channeled that into Conrad, that was not hard. And so, yeah, that was, and you'd think that wouldn't bother him, but it does, you know, because he looks at it as a, you know, a moment in his life that he's embarrassed about. And I think we all have those kind of things. So he doesn't.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, we've all have those moments that like, and you know, the enemy's really good about bringing those up at just the right moment to really can crush you at times. I can understand that. But we love how that character that he's feeling guilty about the past with shows up. Mm-hmm. Right, to his defense, because there is this photo taken at the wrong angle, right? Mm-hmm. That, and then he's just turned into this villain practically overnight, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just, it to us, it felt really real, because unfortunately my family has gone through something like that. Mm-hmm. And it is social media can be brutal. So when we were reading that, my sister's in the book club too, so we were like, oh, this feels like we can really connect to him right now. And we just love that character, that side character came in and really stood up for him. He really set the record straight.
Yeah.
So is there anything like you've observed in the world of sports that kind of inspired that, you know, cause you know, Conrad starts even in book one saying like, you shouldn't believe everything you hear about me on social media and things.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's more like just seeing how the world reacts to social media and saying, you know, the internet lies, it, and people are not, you know, and they're, people are mean. I don't interact too much in any subject that's going to be controversial on social media. I go to social media for fun and laughter, and I like watching, you know, like lawn mowing videos and funny dogs. You know, I don't get involved in, you know, things like that, because I just feel like, you know, it's, I don't want to put on a face, or not that I would, but you know, I just want to be authentic in all things, and I don't want to have to, you know, people can construe things wrongly. And I just, social media and the internet is the Wild West, and there's a lot of dangers, you know, so you got to guard your heart. And I think that's what that is that, you know, there's people that are like, you know, it's, Social media is that. It's not our lives. It doesn't reflect who you are unless you make it reflect who you are. You know, it's just that, you know, kind of piece. And we need to be able to walk away from it. And so, yeah, so I haven't really, you know, I'm trying to think, I don't really have a player that I thought about, you know, like, but I do know that just in my own life, I've tried to be like, let's not take this too seriously and
Right.
not let it affect us. Although it's hard when you have kids this age. I mean, I'm not raising kids in this era. That's a rough era to raise kids in. So, yeah.
Yes, for sure. Well, if you are listening and you want to know more about the Conrad story or dive deep into it, we do have a full discussion in episode 201 already. It's crazy. We have that many out, but
Yeah.
we feature Conrad in that episode, so you can always head to the website and check that out. We do have a spoiler alert in there because there are things we talk about. Like, if you haven't read the book, don't listen to the episode yet.
That's good. I love Conrad. I love the Blue Ox. We have a new Blue Ox series coming out because we've loved Wyatt and Conrad and Jace and all these other Blue Ox guys. And he was really fun to write about. And he appears in some of the other Blue Ox books, so that's kind of fun. But yeah,
That's awesome.
Conrad's fantastic, and he's a fun guy. He's a really fun guy.
He is. And I love, you know, we just talked about that social media piece, like that you got to see the real guy behind the
Yeah.
sports player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We liked how you did that. Okay. And then comes Doyle, which we all love
Doyle.
Doyle. But
Yeah.
again, there were more breadcrumbs in Conrad that made us, again, we were texting each other trying to figure out what has happened
Yeah.
in Doyle's life. And he is actually his lady love is Penelope's sister, older sister, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And that was
So.
a that was a that was an interesting tangled web because I wanted it to take place on this Caribbean island, and I made up the island, but I put it in a place where it would be reasonable to have it. And I also wanted them to be at odds. I wanted the trope to be like not enemies to more, but kind of like workplace rivals. And so, and I wanted Doyle, I mean, and then I got myself into trouble because Doyle has this, you know, sort of really sad past. And Tia, is that her name? I'm trying to remember. Yeah,
Tiana, is it?
Tiana.
Yeah.
Tiana also has a sad past, but it's not the same as Doyle's, right? And so you know, and so I had to give enough space for Doyle and his recovery from that. I don't want to give any spoilers away. And so, and but then Tiana also had to have some time. So they both had to come at it sort of like a second chance kind of thing. And so I was trying to figure out how to do that. And of course, I'm trying to remember my billionaire's name again. Oh, for the love. I'm
Declan.
Declan. Yes, thank you. I was thinking about Ian Shaw. I worked with Ian for so long. I was like, I
Yeah.
need a new billionaire. So Declan, you know, he's this big guy that owns everything. So he invites Doyle down, he invites Tiana down. He doesn't even realize that he's like basically giving them the same job, you know, and I really love that. And because Declan's kind of this guy that's like big picture and not into the details at all. So I could totally see him being like, oh, I already gave that job to somebody. Whoops. Well, just work together. You'll make it work. You know? And so anyway, so yeah. So Doyle is a really interesting character. And I was really trying to figure out how do I give Doyle a happy ending when he has gone through such a tragic situation. And then Tiana, I wanted her to have a happy ending. And Doyle was this fabulous guy. And Doyle's like an alpha male that acts like a beta in some ways. He's really under the radar, he's very steady, very heroic, but he's not like Steinbeck or Connor or Jack. You know, they're like these out of the box alphas that are like, you know, we're going to take charge. Where Doyle is more like, let me play soccer with the kids. Let me listen to the kids. Let me take care of him. So he's a really great nurturer, and he's, you know, he's this really great hero for Tiana, who's more the alpha in that relationship. She's like, I'm gonna go make it happen, you know. And so trying to figure out what's the right balance for them. And I really loved their story. I did a lot of research on the caves and the sulfur and all that kind of stuff that you and so I did a ton of research on that, and you know, had them in the ocean. And so yeah, it was really fun to write that story. And then of course you get to meet Austin and Declan. And I think Steinbeck was there. Yes, he was there because he was with Declan as his bodyguard. So, yeah, so that was fun too.
Yes. And Steinbeck, and more of Steinbeck in Emberley or
Yeah, Amberlee.
Phoenix. Or she has,
Phoenix. Yeah, Phoenix, Amberlee, same thing.
Yeah, comes out and they're trapped in the cave
Yeah,
at
that
one
was
point.
scary. That was really scary. Like for me, I was a little claustrophobic writing it. It's like, I don't think I would have gone that direction. I would have gone the other way. So anyway, yeah, that was fun to write. A lot of research with
That
that
was,
too.
and then there was this, you know, she had to perform that medical procedure on him and then basically drop him and run again, which we learn more about that in Steinbeck's book. But I don't handle blood at all well, and so I was just kind of like, let me skip through some of that. But you wrote it very well. My Tiffany, who's in our group, is a nurse and she's fascinated by it, and so
Wow. Oh, good.
you know,
Good.
so
Well, I have
she thought you
good
did a great
research
job.
partners.
She, I will say, Tiana frustrated us with her whole, because they have to deal with this gang, right? That's just
Yeah.
constantly coming for their stuff, and
Yeah.
she just kind of just, like you said, is kind of like the alpha and just goes out and is like, "Where I'm gonna do this," whereas
Yep.
feels like that's, you know, he does have a very calm approach about like that's not what we need to be doing. So I guess how do you write a heroine that frustrates your readers, but your readers still fall in love with her? You know what I mean?
Well, I think she has two things. One is I think she has noble purposes, right? She's trying to do this for the clinic and take care of the orphans and, you know, build up the clinic. So she's really invested. And her past also makes us a little sympathetic because she is, you know, she was brokenhearted. She did get betrayed, you know, this sort of thing. So she comes into it sort of a wounded heroine, but wanting to make the best of it and also like reclaim her sense of purpose. And so, you know, so she's got noble goals. She just has bad execution. Like, and so it's like, you know, I enjoyed watching Doyle because he's like, woman, this is bad, you know, and she gets herself in over her head and eventually she figures it out. She's like, yeah, no, she's in over her head and she needs Doyle. And so I like, even like when we were at the, when they go to pick up the stuff from the gang and she's like, no, I'm trying to remember. She got kidnapped. Or I don't want to tell too much of the story, but you know, he goes to pick her up and she's like, she doesn't understand why he's doing the things he's doing. And then afterwards she does. And so I think that she's starts to learn throughout the course of the story that maybe she should listen to Doyle and he has a lot of wisdom. And I do like that about them, where they and then, you know, of course the end, I really love the end of Doyle's story where he goes back to Minnesota and he has that conversation with that one guy. And I loved what they said to him and just kind of really set him free in many ways. And
Yeah.
yeah, I like the ending. It was a softer ending, but I thought it was more like really poignant with how he had gone about his change and went into the new season of his life. So yeah, I
Yeah.
enjoyed that one.
We talked about this a little bit, but you had the earthquake happened, right?
Yeah.
And you had a lot of people trapped in different places. So like Doyle and Tiana are trying to get to kids that are trapped in the caves, and then you have Steinbeck and Emberly trapped down below, right, trying to get out. But one of the things that stuck out was Tiana and Doyle having to like improvise and use the zip line because I think like the tide is coming in or something to that effect. So how did you choreograph all that? Because there was just a lot going on. Because then you also have like your search and rescue team that's working
Yep.
out here trying to, you know, help and.
And then the kids that were missing, and then who's there. Yeah, it was a little bit of a yes. So I had charts up, you know, like I drew a map of Mariposa, which is fictional, but it's based on a small little island that has a volcano and sulfur mines and all these things. And so it was very much based on an actual island. I can't remember what it's a very small island near St. Kitts. So I did like aerial photos. I watched lots of so there was a few bloggers that have been to that island, like video bloggers, and I watched their blogs. I looked at all I you know, you can kind of do Zillow and you can walk around the stairs, Google Earth and you can walk around. I looked at Zillow. I looked at, you know, I just did a ton of research of trying to get the lay of the land. And then I did a lot of research about sulfur mines because there was a sulfur mine there. So trying to figure that out. And then I tried to, and then I went into, I just did a ton of research for that one, trying to figure out the cave system. Could they survive? How would it work? And then what are they actually mining for? So trying to figure out that part, you know, so there was a lot of moving parts. But then I was like, okay, if these guys are over here, what's the timeline? And these guys are here, what's this timeline? And what could they be doing? And so, yeah, there was like, sometimes I will get out salt and pepper shakers and silverware and I'll like put it out and my husband's like, oh, we're doing this again. And I'm like, yes, that's the salt is Doyle and the pepper is Tiana. And we're going to go over here with the sugar and that's Steinbeck, you know, and I'll kind of like place them around. So yeah, it's very interactive. And, you know, I'm always trying to go back and forth and figure it out, but it's a lot of fun. Cause you're like, okay, I'm kind of scripting the choreography of these things. And then of course I can say who else is there. So Pete Brooks shows up, which I love, from Montana Rescue. And we have North and I think Skeet and Ham are there from Jones Inc. And, you know, so there's all these different kinds of people there that were really fun to bring in from other stories. And I love doing that.
Yeah. We did look up your island because we weren't sure if it was real or not, too, while we were talking. I mean, you clearly did your research because we were like, I think this is a real place. And, you know, then you find out it's not. But
well, yeah, I like to base my locations on something real, but I like to name it something else so I have the freedom to move stuff around. So, I mean, obviously I don't, you know, if you're in Barcelona, I don't name it something else, but you know, right, like a little tiny island in the Caribbean, I could probably get away with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we loved it. And Doyle is, I would agree that he's that quiet. He's super strong and can definitely be an alpha, but he takes kind of more of the quiet road, I guess you could say. But,
yeah. Yeah,
he's very sweet. Very sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. I really now, going into the fourth book. So Austin, it's kind of an opening scene. I'm trying to remember if it happens right away that she's stranded. It is right away, but I can't remember.
It's the second scene. And so she has the first scene with, she's coming in with, he's a marshal, actually. His name is Hawthorne Marshall, I think, or Hawk Marshall.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so she's coming in on his dive boat. She's a dive instructor, which we already saw in Doyle's book that she's a dive master. And so she sees Steinbeck and they have a little fight. And then she decides to go out to look for this treasure for certain reasons. And I really loved that whole treasure thread that was throughout there and how it wove into the end. That was really fun. And that was a ton of research too, because I had to actually research ships that would go to the Dominican Republic and what would happen to them. And it was really fun. So yeah. So then I wrote the scene, the treasure, the scene with the boat and what happens. And I was like, holy cow. I was really freaked out.
I mean, are you like biting your nails? Like, I mean, it's a nail biter.
It was. When Doyle's book, somebody goes down and runs out of air and gets stuck. That was scary for me. I've actually done that. I was in the Med and I was scuba diving and I ran out of air at the bottom and had to have buddy breathe with the guy on the way up. So that was kind of scary. So I understand how that works. And so I was more freaked out with that one. But then, you know, we have Austin who knows what she's doing, but makes a mistake. And then she comes up. And anyway, so then I follow a girl on Instagram called Ocean Ramsey, and she's a shark specialist. And so she teaches people how to swim with sharks and how to deal with them. And I mean, it's crazy. You got to watch her. She's crazy. She has a documentary on Netflix or Amazon too, which is really interesting. So anyway, so I used a lot of her stuff to develop that scene, her, you know, the things that she teaches. And so that was really interesting. And I enjoyed doing that a lot. And it was a scary scene because I'm like, how long is she going to stay in this ocean? So that was another thing. I had to figure out, how is he going to find her? Because if you've ever looked for someone in the ocean, it's like, you just don't find people. So I had to make that really realistic and try to, yeah, figure that out. And then of course, that's not the first time she gets stranded in the ocean. So there's a lot of ocean. There's a lot of Caribbean Sea stuff in that particular book, but it was really fun. And of course, then we go to Cuba, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I loved that story. It was very different, and but it was a lot of fun to write. And of course, you see a lot of Emberly and Steinbeck too, which is kind of fun.
Yes. And you get to the point where you're like, do not get back on that boat.
Right.
Right. And eventually eventually you can no longer get on the boat. But yeah, it's we said, well, one of the things we talked about, first of all, is when she is stranded and Declan comes on the little speedboat that's part of the yacht and gets her. Like, that's a swoon moment, I think. Yeah. And we're all like, oh.
Yes. Yes.
We said it felt like a Cinderella Prince Charming at that point, you know, just because he does. I mean, he has lots of money and.
Yes. Spoils he, her and he basically saves her. He plucks her out of the ocean and saves her life. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. She would have died if he hadn't shown up. And I also had to figure out the timing because I'm like, how fast could he get there at full throttle in his boat? You know, I had to do all the math on that and, you know, make it realistic. But I liked the problem of the fact that he was, Steinbeck believed he was a criminal. And she was struggling with believing her brother and believing her heart. And that was, I loved that kind of situation that was her issue going between it. So I really liked that. Yeah. And I loved that. I loved his boat. I was like, oh, I want to be on his boat. It was very fun. And then Steinbeck shows up and they have that brother sister fight, which was fantastic. And yeah, there's nothing better than siblings that fight, you know, like in books. I just think it's fun.
Yeah. So two things on what you said. We at the end said we'd love to do book club on a yacht someday. And we said if Declan was real, I'm sure he'd let us do book club.
He
on
would.
His yacht.
Oh, he so would. He totally would. He'd love it. He'd take you all around. He'd be thrilled.
And two, we did talk about how we felt so bad for him because he couldn't reveal his what he was really doing. And so it did look like he wasn't a good guy, right?
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you give the perspective on his side so that you know he is honorable. Because otherwise he does kind of seem like a sketchy person.
Yeah, you know, right. He does. He's got it's the math. Doesn't add up. So there's a reason why Steinbeck thinks he's into something bad. And he kind of is. And I really loved developing to his backstory. Like, what is his backstory? And it was really interesting backstory. I'm still going to go back to it and weave on it a little bit. I have some ideas. So anyway, there might be something coming up in the future where we see Declan in something. But yeah, it was fun. So yeah, he was a multi-layered character because he was a good guy at his heart. But he did have fringy things he was doing. And so it's like, you know, is that really good? So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. And when you take him to Cuba and some stuff happens there, again, you question like, what's really going on with him? So I will tell you that Austin's book, so we do a lasso ratings and we only do 3 lassos, but we all gave this like 4 and 5 lassos because we loved it so much.
I'm so happy to hear that. You know, it's like you have these guy books and then you have like, I usually do like 1 or maybe 2 girl books and I'm like, oh, I hope people like that because the, you know, she's the main character really. I mean, Declan is too, but you know, and so, but I appreciate that because I really like Austin. I love the twist at the end with her friend, some reveals there. And I love the very last scene on the beach in Key West, the little thing that happens. And then of course she goes back to her boat and stuff happens there too. So yeah, I really enjoyed the journey of Austin in that story. She's an alpha, but she's like self-controlled. She's not like a jerk. She's really a nice person. And she's confident. I liked that about her. She wasn't like, oh, I must have Declan. She was almost like, I don't want anybody rich, you know, kind of. And so that was a conflict between them.
And it kind of carries through, clear to the end, like you said, on the boat scene, like she's determined to be independent. And yeah, we loved her. We loved her. And for anyone listening, you can go back to, I think it's episode 203, and you can learn all the things we thought about Austin's book. But we have finally made it to the last book, which is Steinbeck. And at this point, if you're reading through the series, you are like desperate to get to his story. You did such a good job, like just those little scenes, you know, that you did from their point of view that made you go, you really questioned it. But then also at the end of, well, I think it's close to the end of Austin's book, Phoenix disappears.
Yeah.
Right.
It does.
And then so here's Steinbeck going back home worried because he doesn't know where she's at. So you kind of pick up there.
Yeah.
Great cliffhanger and hook, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. I I really enjoyed writing Emberly. She was a really interesting character. She's got a sister named Nimue, and more about Nimue later. But I liked her relationship with her sister. We find out a lot about why she made the choices she did, and she does not have the same, sort of stable home upbringing that Steinbeck does. She brings a lot of baggage and brokenness to the relationship, but she's sort of figured it out, and she's like this amazing thief, pickpocket, and that's where she's built her identity. And I think that's kind of the whole thing, is that she kind of sees herself in this. And then I really wanted her to have this sense of I'm trapped. My favorite scene in that whole story was, and I really worked on it, was when she gets to the place off the boat in the very beginning, and she has to, and they take her to that other place, the darker place, and she's expecting, that she's by herself, and then something happens. And I loved that moment. I just was like, yes, this is how it should be. So anyway, yeah.
We did too, and we thought the way she reacted really showed her true feelings right off the bat. But she
Yeah.
didn't know she had those feelings, I feel like,
Yeah.
until later on. Yeah, anyway, so we won't give anything away because I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't read it yet. It's an excellent, excellent story. So then you have where he takes her home and says that they're dating, but at that time they're not like really dating. And you had Austin be a little cold, like pretty harsh.
Yeah.
So, like, just tell me your thoughts behind that. I'm just curious
Well,
because
I was
I
trying,
when I read it,
yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, well, I was trying to make it sort of realistic. Like Austin, like Phoenix did not leave Austin with a good feeling. Like Phoenix was like, she dove off the ship when they got to Cuba and dragged Steinbeck with her. So I'm not going to get into that, but I don't want any spoilers. But I mean, like, clearly in Phoenix's mind, I'm sorry, in Austin's mind, Phoenix is trouble. Emberly's trouble. And she doesn't want to see Steinbeck, who's, come back from this really devastating situation and found his feet again, to get dragged back into this like world of danger and clandestine operations and, this kind of stuff. So when she comes back and she sees Emberly, she's like, I don't know about this, And so I think she's not thrilled. And I really like to deal with real emotions. And so, I think, some, we she was cordial and enough where she was like, I'm gonna wait and see, but she certainly wasn't warm, because she was like, I don't know if this is the right guy. And I feel like when we, I don't, I mean, she could have pretended to be nice to her and then, rah, 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 behind her back, and but I felt like that wasn't Austin. Like there, that might have been a different character. Maybe even Penny would have been that way, where she's like, everything's fine. And then behind the scenes, she's maybe not as real. But Austin is really real. She's like, this is the way it is. And so she, I think, needed to bring some, sort of real emotion to the page. I just didn't see her being like, hey, Emberly, how you doing, girl? It's good to see you. I didn't see that happening between them after everything that they had lived through. And so, yeah. So I just thought, let's just make it real.
Yeah. No, and you did it really well. I think she shocked us because she did it in front of everybody instead of like a side conversation. I think that's probably the more shocking
Yeah.
piece to it.
Yeah, and she
But
probably
you're right. Austin's pretty bold.
she is,
So.
and I she's not a she's also not a liar. Like, like some people might gloss over the truth. Hi, and then maybe in private, and maybe, maybe that would have been a better choice, but I just saw Austin as being like, I'm not there. I'm not going to say the emperor has no clothes or has clothes. The emperor has no clothes here, and she's not, she is trouble. And, and she
No, we loved it. No, I'm not saying there was anything wrong with it. It
No,
just
no.
like it's one of those shock factors, like, whoa, she just went ahead and
Laid it all
plowed
out
right through
there.
that, didn't she?
And I
So.
thought Emberly handled it pretty well. I mean, she was like, yeah, she's not wrong. I mean, Austin has reasons not to like her, and so, yeah, I think, yeah.
And in this book, is this where your Judah Lion character comes back in on the beach? I thought so. Yeah.
He's a so Steinbeck and Emberly go back down to Florida to be with Nimue, her sister. I'm trying to remember why they go back down there. There's some reason. And then they, I think they're trying to figure out about what to do next. I can't remember. But anyway, they're down there and he goes on a walk on the beach and he meets this guy fishing. And I lived down there too. So it was really fun for me because I figured out where exactly they lived and where he would walk and all that kind of stuff. But I was like, he'd had some conversations with his dad and his brothers, but I was like, he needed somebody sort of outside. And so I thought this random stranger could tell him some stuff and that he could mull upon. So I really liked that. I thought that was great. Now I'm trying to remember if the fire happens. Yes. Before they go to New York City? I think it does. Yes. Yes.
While they're down there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so then they go to New York City and that was fun because I got to bring in all these different people like Pete Brooks and Jesse were there. Jess and Pete were there. And there were other people there that I was able to bring in that would have been at this event. We brought in Pippa we brought in people from the Marshalls. So Frasier and Pippa and Creed and I can't think of her name now. She's the princess in Locked in Land. She was Creed's heroine. Anyway, I can't think of her name now. Anyway, but she was there. And then I introduced Britta White, who is the daughter of the president, who has a role in my upcoming series. And so, and then I introduced a Montalita, one of the Montalita Royals, which was really fun because she's coming up in a series. So it was really fun to introduce some new characters. And then, of course, I did all this research on these Android or these AI dogs, you know, which is real. And it was really fun to deal with. And of course, that book came out like 2 years ago, maybe. I can't remember. Maybe a year ago. Anyway, it's all blurry. But now we have all sorts of AI stuff. Like there are AI dogs, right? And so you're like, okay.
Yeah.
The future is here.
And did you also at the beginning bring in one of your characters from Russia? From the earlier series?
Yes, I did. I brought in, let me think here. So we have the bad guys. So Alan Martin is still involved in that series. And I'm trying to remember in Steinbeck if there's a person from overseas. Like, they don't go to Russia. I'm kind of getting my books confused because I know in Ned's story, he actually goes and talks to a couple of guys that I had in my Russia books. But I'm trying, because he was going back to Russia. But I'm trying to remember in this one if we had who we had in the story from Russia, maybe somebody he'd met with in Portugal. I can't remember. So,
I feel like there was just somebody, but I could be wrong. But we know what, now that we talk about Alan Martin. So, by the way, just for anyone listening, I highly recommend the Minnesota Kingston series. You're going to be hooked and hogtied for sure until you get all the way through it. But you mentioned Alan Martin. Tell us a little bit about what is coming out, because we did kind of touch on briefly The Hunt for Alan Martin. Mm-hmm. Is that out yet? Or
First two books are out. Third one comes out in August and the last one comes out in October. So that's a really fun series. So I got so much reader mail. A lot of my reader mail was, you know, like, we love these characters here, whatever. And then the other half was, would you please dispose of Alan Martin, please? He cannot continue to be the bad guy. So I'm like, okay. I mean, I had a little Mission Impossible thing going where it's the same bad guy throughout like the whole things. But I was like, well, he gets around. So I thought he needs to have his journey. But his journey is not as cut and dry as we would think. I mean, as are every bad guy, there's a way that he got into this. And so I really enjoyed. So in The Hunt for Alan Martin, we had, so it's north, east, south, west. So that's the names of the books. And each one of them is based on nickname or name of the main character. So North Gunderson, Skeet, his name is Easton. South, his name is Dakota, and West, his name is West. So, you know, they all take place in those areas. So you've got like North was Montana, East is Thailand, South is Australia, and North is, or West is Key West. So, you know, kind of put him in those places. So then I created this big arc of where, okay, now we're going to get Alan Martin. And I always wanted to have a Jones Inc. series. So these are kind of the Jones Inc. guys, and they go after Alan Martin. And so it's really fun. But what I really love is that throughout the whole series, you get Alan Martin's perspective. It goes way back into the past and tells you his story of how he got to it, where he is. And you see York, and you see all of the things that happen with the Marshals, with Ham, with Price of Valor, I can't think of it now. I came up with the name of Creed's girlfriend, but anyway.
Sounds familiar.
Yes. What is her name? Anyway, it's going to be bugging me the whole time. It's not like I haven't written like 4 books about her or whatever. So we have her, we have what happened in Lockton Land. We have all of these pieces that are dripped throughout the whole series. And so you get his backstory all the way up until West. And then he has a POV in West that's current. So it's really a interesting way to, just show the backstory. Because I just wanted to have people that have read all of the series, the Marshals and everything, they're going to remember that scene. And they're going to go, oh, that's why. Or I can see that, And so it's like I'm telling a similar scene from Alan's point of view, why he did what he did. So it was kind of a fun way for me to like wrap up his persona and that sort of thing. So it was a fun series. So yes, we're right in the middle. Of course, it's a big global series, and of course bad things are happening. Of course there are bad guys involved beyond Alan Martin. Things happen. It's part of it. And it's also very up to date in terms of, taken from the headlines kind of thing. So yeah, it was very fun. So yeah, so it's a fun series. I think people will enjoy it. And now we're wrapping up Alan Martin. I have a new bad guy and a couple of them in the wings. So we'll dispense maybe with Alan Martin. Don't want to give anything away, but and then we're going to keep moving on. And there are other bad people out there in the world. So got to give them their chance.
Could someone just jump into that series and understand, or do you recommend reading certain series before they hop into that one?
The reason I did it that way is so that people could jump in and understand, because otherwise there was going to be all these people that didn't understand who the heck is Alan Martin and why do we care? Like, why is it the hunt for Alan Martin? Like, so somebody brand new is going to be like, I don't care. Well, now, or they don't know. So now they'll know, okay, this is why we're hunting him. It's because he's done all of these things. And you can be a new reader and just read it for the fun trope that it is. And then, find out why are they hunting Alan Martin, and it's fine. So yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I have loved our discussion over the Minnesota Kingston series. Well, and I just love being able to chat with you. You have such wonderful ideas, and
thank you.
It's just a pleasure. So I also just want to let everybody know that you need to sign up for her newsletter. So make sure you check out her website. Mm-hmm. And it's just SusieMayWarren.com, right?
Yep. And you get a free novella when you sign up. And it's a starter. Like, if you're wondering, like, where do I start the Susan May Warren Odyssey? You get the novella and that sparks like the whole thing. So I'll send you like emails of, oh, this is what you should read next. And this is what you should read next. So you can follow along the journey. So yes. But I mean, I try to make it so that anyone can start a book anywhere so that they have enough information. That I build into the story enough information for people to catch up. So yeah, you don't have to start at book, number 20 and read 20 through 75 to be able to catch up. So yeah. So
that's anyway, awesome.
But I appreciate you reading. Like me, go ahead.
If you're like me and you'd like to read it all in order, you can do that. And you're going to love every book you pick up of hers. I've not found one I didn't love. So
thank you. Well, I do appreciate you guys reading them. I just am really blessed that you read the whole series and enjoyed it. That's really great. That's my goal, is to have people be like, oh, I just love the first one. I had to read the next one. And then they feel like they're part of the family and they understand it. And then the happy ending that really makes it into something that is a really fun, kind of journey for people. So I really love that part.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. And I'm sure we'll have you on the podcast again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks so much for having me, and you guys have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.